and welcome to this month's very special edition of Scott's Inner Circle, where I pull back the kimono and invite you into my private network of friends and confidants to hear their advice. Now, this month, we're talking investing, but it's kind of different to the two editions of Scott's Inner Circle we've done so far, and for two reasons. The first is that you may have noticed we're basing this one around audio this time. Now remember, part of the promise of Scott's Inner Circle is that each month we're delivering it in a format that we thought was best. And we think this month you're going to get a lot out of hearing a real conversation about investing rather than just passively reading it. As for the second reason this month is different, well, like I said, I promised as part of Scott's Inner Circle that I would connect you to my network of close friends and confidants. And when it comes to investing, there is nobody I trust more than our very own chief investment analyst at The Blueprint, Mr. Michael Kemp. Open your kimono and sit down, my friend.
Thanks, Scott. And hello to everybody.
Now, before we dive into this edition, I just want to get everyone to understand what we're trying to do today, right? So we're going to show you how to size up any stock in just 60 seconds. So if you're listening, I'd just like you to pause for a moment and picture this. So you're at a family dinner and everyone's having a great time, everyone's chatting, and then your loudmouth brother-in-law rocks up in his leased BMW, he pulls up a seat at the table and he starts mouthing off about some hot stock tip. It's some second-tier dog shit mining company that he insists is about to boom big time. Everyone listens fascinated, nodding their heads. After all, he sounds confident, so he must be right, right? But you just whip out your phone, you check your CompSec app, and in 60 seconds, you say to him, Doug, sorry, mate, there's no way I'd invest in that. It hasn't even made a profit for 5 years. That is what we're going to teach you today. Not to pick a stock in 60 seconds. We can't show you how to do that, but we're going to pretty much show how anyone can quickly spot a dog if they know how. Now, Mike, the entire concept of this process came because we were going to do a stock picking course for Scott's Inner Circle, and we went back and forth with that idea, didn't we?
Well, we did, and actually learning how to pick stocks well is a life's love. It's not a one-off course.
One of the things that we try and do at The Blueprint is just to tell you the truth. And the truth is that we could have done, and we have in the past, done a basic stock picking course. We actually went through and reviewed that. And we started having a very long conversation about how can we teach people how to pick stocks. And what we had a really good conversation that, how long have you been devoting your life to learning about valuation?
Oh, look, probably 40 years. Near enough.
40 years.
Yeah.
And you are completely and utterly fascinated about the valuation process.
I am. And I can also tell you, Scott, I don't know everything about it yet.
The truth is that you have to make it part of your life. You've got to be fascinated. And even when you're fascinated, you then have to have the correct mental approach to investing. Thought processes that says that when everybody is losing their mind, that's when I get excited.
Yeah.
That is one thing that you have that I don't know. There are very few people I know that really think like you, having spent a lot of time with you over the years. And I think that is another one of your advantages. But for those people who are just wanting to know, how do I filter out the dogs? We were having this discussion back and forth. And after, I don't know how long we were talking for, you actually said in exasperation, I can look at my CompSec screen and I can tell whether I don't want to invest in this company.
Correct.
Within 60 seconds.
Correct.
And I said, bang, bango, that's what I want to discover.
Correct.
So let's talk about the fact, do you think that you can, is that true? You can actually look at a CompSec screen, look at a stock and say whether you won't invest it within 60 seconds.
Correct. I can't look at it and say if I will invest it in 60 seconds because it takes a lot of time to investigate a company. But I can tell you within 60 seconds that I don't want to invest in it. Perfect example is I was visited by a real estate agent several years ago, and he was sitting in my lounge room and he started asking me about this stock that he'd bought and it was going down and what I thought of it. And I said, does it make money? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, is the company profitable? And he goes, I don't know. So we quickly looked it up on my computer and I said, mate, it hasn't made money for years. Why did you buy it? Oh, someone told me it was a great thing to buy.
So it's effectively a BS detector.
Correct.
A way to determine whether the stock you're looking at stinks. But then once it's passed the sniff test, there's a lot more work that you need to do before you can think about investing in
it. It's a filter. It gets rid of the rubbish first. So you don't waste your time looking at companies or buying companies that you wouldn't touch with a barge pole.
All right. So listeners, what I want you to do is get out the cheat sheet that you downloaded with this audio. We're going to go through the steps that Mike's going through. We're actually going to step this out together. So you can boil all investing in shares down to two important points, Mike. What are they?
Well, the first thing you want to do is buy companies that aren't going to go bust. Okay, so you want it to be safe. You don't want it to go broke. And a big factor there is debt. So we look at debt. And the second thing is, when you invest money, you want more money back than you put in the first place. So you want a good rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
So you want a company that's generating good earnings and good earnings growth. So they're the two things. You don't want your company to go broke and you want a good return on your money. They're effectively, that's what investing boils down to, those two essential things. And everything we try and search for and endeavor to do is trying to answer those two questions.
Don't go bust and get a decent return on the money that we do invest. Let's look at some simple tests, right? So we can show people.
Okay, look, let's start off with a company that I'd consider investment quality. Now, I want to say what I mean by investment quality.
Yes.
I mean that it is a company that is worth investing in, but I will not invest in it unless it is being offered on the stock market for a correct price, for a good price, for a low price. So just because I say it's investment quality doesn't mean I yet want to invest in it, but it's certainly something I'm going to put on my radar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are plenty of investment quality stocks out there, so just don't hone in on this one. I'm going to use ARB Corporation purely as an example. It manufactures accessories for four-wheel drives, and it's one of our blueprint stocks.
One of our blueprint stocks.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to use the CommSec website from my initial screen because I'm a CommSec subscriber. Now, those of you who do use CommSec can bring up the page that we are showing you here, the cheat sheet.
Mm-hmm.
You click on home page, plug in the company's ASX code into the box on the top right-hand side, click on company research, and then click on financials. But we acknowledge that not everyone is a subscriber to CommSec.
And that's why we've got the cheat sheet there, so you'll be able to follow along as we do it. So this is going to bring up here, we're looking at here, Mike, brings up the summary of the key financial results of the company for the past 10 years.
Correct. There in one page, they have done all the work for you in summarising the results for the last 10 years. Now, Scott, people could also get these figures from the last 10 annual reports, but it'd be a hell of a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And remembering we're doing this in 60 seconds, so I can just scan my eye across that one page and glean the information that I want to get.
Mm-hmm. So again, you should be following along on the cheat sheet. This is the first image, so let's keep moving.
Okay. All right, so I've got the financials open, and I want to check the level of debt, because debt is one of the main reasons that company get into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And if I run my eye down to the capital structure, it says total debt is zero, long-term debt zero, shareholders' equity $249 million. Now, what that basically means is this company is carrying no debt, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Now, that's not typical of most listed Australian companies.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. But there's another important thing that's very important to say about debt is it's also a company that has a cyclical income stream, varies a lot from year to year. It's important they have lower debt than a company that has very, very steady earnings and knows how those earnings are going to come in each year, and they'll be able to service their debt.
So we were thinking maybe something along the lines of either a Telstra or a Woolies that have very stable.
Fairly steady, yes. Much more steady than, say, a mining or an engineering company.
Yes.
So the more cyclical, the less debt you'd want. As a rough rule of thumb, if debt is a percentage of total capital greater than about half, we start to get worried. Now, total capital, let me describe that term. It's important. There are two main forms of capital that a company uses to manage its operations. What we call shareholders' equity, which is money that the shareholders, their stake in the company. And then there's bank money, which is debt. And if I could draw an analogy here, it's a bit like, say, you have a house that's worth $1 million and the bank mortgage is $500,000 and the money you have it in is $500,000. Then you'd say debt represents 50% of the total capital, the mm-hmm. total value of the house. Mm-hmm. So that figure down there in that we've got on that cheat sheet and the ComSec, it's right across the right-hand side. It says for ARB, zero of capital. That means a debt represents zero.
We'll show you another, probably more lively debt position later, but let's just stick with this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, so that's the debt. Now, there's other measures of debt, but that's the one I just want to eyeball first off.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get on to profitability.
So that's step two. Does the company show a history of making profits?
Yes. Okay. Step two. So the way we do that is if you look at your cheat sheet and you look for the third line down, it says earnings. Now, this is earnings per share. It's not the total earnings of the company. Now, remember, as a shareholder, what's important to you is how much earnings are allocated to each share you own. So that's earnings per share. Now, if you look at the left of that row, 2007, you'll see it's 23.7. And if you run your eye across to the right along the same row, each year it gets progressively bigger. So we really like to see earnings that are either steady or increasing is even better, but we don't want it to see it falling. So that's our second quick check. Earnings per share is growing. We like that.
Tick.
Okay. Also, very, very importantly, Scott, we don't want any negatives there.
No.
Okay. We'll tolerate one or two negatives, but we need to go exploring why it is negative.
It's a bit of a red flag.
Well, there are reasons why it can be negative without actually a drop in operating and earnings. But we like to see positive. If there's a negative, you have to investigate the reason for the negative. It might just be a one-off year.
Right off. Yep.
Okay. So now we're on to step four. A book value. Now, book value, that's book value per share, by the way, those figures there. It's how much shareholders' equity is in each share you own, okay? Now, we really like to see a book value that's growing. And if we look at ARB, back in 2007, it was $1.03 per share was the shareholders' equity per share, or book value per share. Book value and shareholders' equity mean the same thing. And if we run our eye across to the right, every single year it's increased. In fact, it's tripled in 10 years. Now, it doesn't have to increase every single year, but we do like to see it increasing. We don't like to see it decreasing. Okay?
Great. So we've now covered, Mike, just to reiterate, we've covered debt.
Yes.
We've covered a history of profits, whether earnings have been growing,
yep,
and whether book value has been growing. Now you mentioned one last step,
yep,
and it's one that every investor should think about. Are you getting a decent return on your money?
Correct.
So, Mike, how do you work that out?
Okay. Now, if we look at our cheat sheet, we'll see return on capital and return on equity. There's two rows there. They're actually next to each other.
Okay, so bring that up. That is, that's the next part of the cheat sheet that you need to be looking at.
Now, I mentioned before what capital is. Capital is the money that is used to run that business, and it's from the two sources, from the shareholders and from the bank. And when you add those two figures together, it's the total capital that management are using to run that business. So you like to see a good return on capital, that the management are using the money well to run the business, to get a return on that money, that the business is profitable. And if you look at ARB and you run your eye along there, you're getting a return on capital of around about, well, it's most years it's in the 20s. It's excellent. We would be looking for figures, the higher, the better.
Yes.
Now, return on equity is just one part of the capital. It's the return on the shareholders' funds. So this is after the debt and interest has been paid. So this is the return that the shareholders are getting on the money that they haven't got invested in the business. We like to see a return on equity at least in the teens. If it's in single digits, we get a bit upset because that's a pretty lousy return
this
on equity.
This is a phenomenal return on equity.
It is a phenomenal return on equity, and it's consistent and it's high. That is a very, very... Now, something interesting, Scott, if you look at the last row there, 2016, or the last two numbers in each of those two rows, the return on capital and return on equity are the same. And the reason for that is there is no debt. So effectively, all the capital is equity. That's why the figures are the same. But these are great figures. If you saw negatives, if you saw single digits, consistently single digits, you'd be saying, this is not really a company I want to invest in, or I don't really want to look further at this company. Now, we've spent a lot of time talking about this, Scott, but that eyeballing of each of those columns, or not columns, rows, I should say, each of those rows, you can eyeball that in under 60 seconds.
Under 60 seconds. All right. So, and this really is a sniff test. All right. So ARB is a cracking company, and that is why it is a blueprint. We've recommended it in the blueprint and done quite well out of it. Let's now look at, take another sniff at a company that may be a little bit more pungent, Mike, that might have a bit of a whiff about it.
Yep.
Talking about Myer, one of Australia's great department stores. Let's size up this stock in under 60 seconds.
Okay,
let's take us through it.
Clock ticking, debt. Let's look at capital structure. 12% of capital is debt. That's not too bad. We don't get too worried about that.
Yep.
History of profits. Let's look at earnings per share column. 18, 27, 26. Yeah, it's looking okay until we hit around about 2014 and then it falls off a cliff.
Hello.
So earnings are dropping. Book value per share, yeah, looks okay till about 2013, 14. Then it starts to come off. So the thing that really worries me about this stock there is that earnings have been dropping off significantly. Earnings per share have been dropping off significantly. Let's go to the return on capital and return on equity. Teens, return on capital was looking pretty good until around about 2013 came off, then dipped into single digits. Return on equity, remembering that's return on shareholders' funds, looking not too bad until 2013, dropped off. Fell off a cliff. So this company has got a poor return on the money invested. It has falling earnings per share and a falling book value per share. How long did that take, Scott?
I reckon we were nearly bang on 60
seconds. I reckon
seconds.
People are out there timing. And I tell you what, if it was a bit over, it's because I was yakking.
So you would not be investing in Myer?
I would not pursue an investigation of Myer any further. And I'll tell you something funny. We were going through this the other day as an example, and I said to one of our young fellows at the office, I'm going to choose Myers as a stock I would invest in. And I told him why. The next day it fell 10%.
So what I like about this, how to size up any stock in 60 seconds, is it is something that you can use. You don't have to understand valuation intricately, but you can use it to keep yourself safe. So if somebody comes to you with a hot tip, or you're looking at a business yourself, because we do encourage people to make their own decisions, you can actually look at this and say, what has been the return for shareholders? How are the earnings growing?
Yep.
And looking at the debt levels. And then what we can then do is, once you've done that, you can then start to ask some deeper questions, obviously.
Correct. And I want to say it again. I know we said it earlier, but I want to say it again. That is an initial screen. From there, you need to go to investigate the companies further to decide whether or not you would want to invest.
So we've done our 60-second health test. We've got rid of the dogs, which is, Mike, 90% of the companies that trade on the stock market.
Great majority of companies on the stock exchange.
So now let's talk about the further checks. Like, what are we looking at? What are the things that we're going to be looking at more deeply if it actually passes that 60-second test?
Well, one of the very, very important things is you want people running this company who are capable, honest, and although this is not essential, preferably have skin in the game. Yeah. Own a good chunk of this company themselves, because okay, they're not going to do something dumb with their own money, are they?
So that's the first one. You can check that via the annual report. What the key management have got in shares?
Correct, Scott. You go to the back of the annual report. You look at the top 20 shareholders, and you'd like to see your CEO, your managing director, your chairman. You like to see their names appearing in the top 20.
Yep. And so working out whether they're capable, how do you do that?
Often it takes a fair bit of effort. I mean, you want to study their career, their track record. If they're well-known people, I'll be written up in the financial press and possibly for a decade or two. You want to know their track record. What other companies have they run? How successful or unsuccessful have those other companies have been?
And can I just say that at the Blueprint, that's a lot of what we do. We sit down with owners, so CEOs, and we talk to them, eyeball them, and get a read on them, get a feel.
Yep. There's also a numerical way of assessing the success or capabilities of management too. Say, for example, you had two companies in a sector, operating in a sector, whether it be retail, whether it be engineering, whether it be anything. And one company has got a very high return on capital. In other words, they're performing well. They're using every dollar of their shareholders' money to get a good return on it. And another company that's running in the same business is getting a poor return on capital. Now, there's a lot of reasons that can happen, but some analysts use that as a way of assessing how skilled that particular management is in returning good money to its shareholders.
And again, just to bring this back to the Blueprint, you could see we've spoken about this very instance before. An example of this is Credit Corp.
Yep.
And
Collection House. Collection House.
And the Thomas Beregi, who has done very, very well, been a very numbers metric driven CEO and has absolutely
CEO of Credit Corp.
Of Credit Corp and absolutely rocketed that company and its share price.
Yep.
And then you had Collection House, which really struggled for many years and is, you know, now potentially turning around.
Well, Anthony Rivas is trying very, very hard to make changes and get that operating on all cylinders.
Honest. We want honest management.
Yeah, this is the third thing. We've said we prefer them to have the skin in the game, although it's not absolutely essential. We want them to be capable. That is essential. And thirdly, we want them to be honest, and that is essential.
There's been a few times where I've doubted some of the people that I've dealt with, and we have acted accordingly.
Yeah, I mean Warren Buffett likes, he basically says you want management that are capable and honest, but you don't want them who are capable and dishonest. So they're acting in their own interests. Look, how do we assess honesty? That's where we're getting at with this. Look, first of all, read the annual report. Read the letters that they have written. Read what the CEO and managing director have written in the front of the annual report. Is it their letter, or is it just something that's written by a PR department that's absolute hype and garbage? You can sense often whether it's the CEO that's written it. You want CEOs that will admit their mistakes if they make them. You don't want them to make
it's a
too
huge
many.
One. It's a
you
huge
don't.
One.
You want them to be
own it.
Own it, speak from the heart, give praise to their employees, but cop any problems. Speak straight is basically it. You want them to speak straight. You want them to speak to you as if you were their brother, sister, mother, father, whatever. So, and a lot of CEOs don't talk that way. They try and cover up their mistakes. You also want, when they make promises, either in the press or interviewed or in their annual report, you want to check whether they've delivered on those promises. Because sometimes they just make these hot air, they're a bit like politicians, they make these hot air promises and it never works out.
Okay, number two, you've said selecting companies as investments is more about their future performance than it is their past performance.
Yeah, correct. Because when you put money into an investment in the share market, you are putting money out today with the aim of getting a return on that money. So it is always about the future when you're investing. The company will continue to be profitable. The company will continue to pay a dividend. And investing is all about the future. Now, it's very important. I think you were just about to ask me, well, we've just looked back 10 years.
Mm.
That was all about the past. All that is doing in that assessment is giving you a feel for how things have been going. And you can override all those figures that we've looked at before if you believe that the future is going to be very different than the past. So, I mean, there's the old saying, how can you assess the future without looking at the past? But put it into context, it's not just about the past, it's about the future.
And if we look at Saymire, which is one of the whiffier of the two companies,
yep,
that we looked at, department stores in the US, mate, they are struggling. You and I was over there in May. You had a lot of them going bankrupt. Amazon.com is absolutely flattening US retail. So you would have to argue that the last 10 years are going to be very different,
yeah,
for Meijer and for retailing in general.
It's the rise of e-commerce generally. And this is exactly an example of what I was talking about just then. Looking at historical figures is okay, but it's really about the future. And that's why it's not just eyeballing a set of figures. You also have to understand the sector. You have to understand what is going on in that sector. And generally, so it's reading and it's an interest in what's going on.
Investment quality companies make lousy investments if you pay too much for them. So you can do the 60-second sniff test. You can get rid of the dogs. You can find some that you like. You can answer all these questions. It's got good quality management. We've looked at the industry. We think this is going to be a good investment going forward, growing our earnings. However, if you pay too much for them, Michael Kemp, talk to me about the final piece of the puzzle, which is valuation.
Absolutely. I mean, the share market is offering shares all day at a certain price, and buyers are trying to buy all day at a certain price, and that price moves around. You may have found a great company that you reckon is worth $20, and the market is offering it for $40. Even though it's a great company, you wouldn't want to buy it.
Can I just say that years ago, we looked at Telstra, and I said, I want you to look at Telstra because a friend of mine had just become, it was rumored he was going to become CEO, and he became the CEO. And you came back to me, and it was Telstra.
I said I'd buy it if it was under five.
And you came back and said you would buy it under five. And I said, don't be stupid. Telstra won't get under $5. It's paying this huge dividend.
Well, the thing is, if a stock doesn't get down to your value, you're not forced to buy it.
You don't have to swing.
It's totally optional.
Correct.
So if you've unearthed a great company, you need to be able to value that company or put a value on it that you're prepared to pay. And if it's not trading at that value, you just sit on your hands. If it does eventually drop to that value, you buy it. If it doesn't, you don't buy it. It's that simple. Yeah.
Do you sweat the when you're putting on a buy,
mm-hmm,
when you're purchasing some, mm-hmm, stock? Do you sweat the sense, or do you?
No, never. Because you cannot pick the lowest price ever. You cannot pick the highest price to sell ever. If you are within a ballpark, you just get set.
Yeah.
You just get set. You know, if you're going to sit there and quibble over a cent, or two, it might move away from you.
Conclusions to our how to size up any stock in 60 seconds or less. Can everyone do this, do you think?
I think everyone can size up a stock in 60 seconds the way we showed them. I think anyone can do that, yeah.
There's this common saying amongst experienced investors that the more that you learn, the more that you realise that you don't know. Give some context around that.
When I started investing, I thought, look, all I need to do is learn this little valuation formula and throw some figures in and away I go, and this is going to be really, really easy. 35, 40 years on, after many, many, I'd have to say thousands of hours of devoted to this, what I've learned is there is significant uncertainty in the market because the market is about the future. And it doesn't matter how versed anyone gets with investing, I will say to them, no one has a crystal ball on the future. And you might well say, well, how then can you get a better return than the market? The way you get a better return on the market is to get an edge. In other words, something that you are doing is winning more often than it's losing. It doesn't mean you'll never lose. It doesn't mean that you'll never pick a stock that goes down. You will pick a stock that turns out to not be a great investment. But As the great Peter Lynch, investor who ran Magellan Fund, said, and I won't get the exact quote here, Scott, you know what I'm about to say. If you're a stock picker and you're right 6 times out of 10, then you're a winner.
But I think really what we're trying to do is be honest with our members and say there is no one book. There is no one, there definitely isn't one trading package or black box system or guru that can give you the winning numbers.
No.
There is no cheat sheet as such. I guess what I'm trying to say is that you really have to have a passion for this. It really has to be something that you're not only have a passing interest in, that you've devoted a large amount of your time. And even that, though, Mike, when I was on the dealing desk, I found there are a lot of professional investors that are fascinated by the stock market, but that is almost a hindrance to them rather than a help, because they get caught up in the day-to-day headlines and machinations of the market moving.
Can't see the wood for the trees.
And that's the really interesting thing with you. You are the one person that I know who thinks very, very differently from almost anyone else that I've ever really encountered. You don't really care about what is happening in the newspapers. You are a total independent thinker. And we've had many robust discussions where I've tried to change your mind. You are not a man for changing your mind, which is obviously a huge help for you in investing.
I don't think there's anything to be learned by chasing the crowd. If you do, you're going to make all the same mistakes that the crowd are making. At best, you'll just get average returns, and I'd suggest more often you'll get subpar returns if you just take your cues from what everyone's doing.
So becoming a successful investor for most people simply means, I guess, regular saving and investing into shares.
You spend less than you earn, you save the difference, and you invest it wisely. And the essence to becoming a successful investor is investing savings. And it doesn't mean you have to pick stocks. You can invest in all sorts of other things. And we've talked about them. We've talked about the break free. We've talked about listed investment companies like AFIC. We've talked about index funds. You don't have to pick stocks to be a great investor.
And for those of you who don't know, the break free portfolio is our, I guess you'd call it our set and forget investment strategy. It's really designed to give you a nice conservative return of what, between, well, 7 and 10%.
Well, it's going to vary from year to year, but long term, it's probably in the order of about 7%.
7%. With just about a half an hour's management every single year. And at the other end of the spectrum, it could mean that you could choose to study the process of investing and learn how to read an annual report and choose your own stocks. But both of these are investing. But if you feel that you're cut out for choosing your own stocks, well, first you can check out the 4-part stock valuation course we've created. You'll find it on the Blueprint website under Portfolio, Stocks, and Blueprint Bonuses. Okay. And that's a great place to get started. But in addition to that, as part of this month's edition of the Inner Circle, we're giving away the first few chapters of Mike's latest book, Uncommon Sense. Mike, can you tell us a little about those first few chapters we're giving away?
It's a bit of an intro to investing. I talk about how I got into investing. So there's an insight into sort of makeup and how you operate and how you think. I had a passion for it at a very, very young age. I talk in those initial chapters about the Pied Piper way of investing that I don't necessarily believe in. People just follow other people's cues without really thinking. I talk about economics, economists predicting, and I think they have a very, very poor record of predicting. I mean, so many times people are sitting there watching TV and an economist comes out and he says, oh, the Aussie dollar's going to 80 cents, or it's going to 60 cents, or the stock market's going to this, or the stock market's going to that. And I make a comment at the summary at the end of that chapter. The best thing you can do when a economist comes on TV is to use the time constructively. Get up and go and make yourself a cup of tea.
Give your wife a massage.
Give your wife a massage. Forecasting is not something that really is very useful in selecting stocks. The problem is forecasts rarely come true and people never check that the economist's forecast ever worked out. So, but I go into a lot more than that sort of stuff in the book. It sort of evolves into history of the stock market, at things that work and don't work. I talk about charting. I even get into
which doesn't work.
Well, there have been some successful charters out there. They're pretty rare. It's certainly nothing I have ever become attracted to. And one of the greatest traders of all time, one of the greatest stock traders, and I'm not talking about investor here, I'm talking about a person who swings in and out of the market very quickly, is a guy called Jesse Livermore. And he didn't use charts. Didn't use charts at all. So I think that a lot of people see things in charts that just aren't even there.
Mm-hmm. But as part of this month's Inner Circle, we're helping 20 Blueprinters get started on their investing journey by giving away 20 signed copies of your book. All you need to do is to post on the Blueprint website underneath the issue of this Inner Circle what your biggest takeaway or surprise was from what you learned today. Mike and I will be picking our favourites that are posted in the next 48 hours. But for now, that's it for this session. If you've decided that individual stock investing isn't for you, that's a perfectly reasonable decision, and we highly recommend you check out our Break Free portfolio. But if you're keen to learn more, you can continue by checking out the bonus chapters of Mike Kemp's book, Uncommon Sense, which are on the Blueprint member website along with this session. That's all we have time for today, Mike. Thank you.
That's okay, Scott. A lot of fun.
And thank you for listening. And we'll be back with you again in a week for an episode of A Beer with Barefoot. Until then, tread your own path.
See ya.